Courtside of the Virtual Hardwood, it's the MLSC Podcast. This is episode 518. I am Andrew, Andrew Now Forum, Andrew MLSC on X. With me, as always, my co-host Derek, DP3 Now Forum, and DP3G and DP384 on X. Derek, March Madness is upon us. March Madness will be upon us soon. We've had some fun Parsec sessions. We've got some troubling news about layoffs at EA. But before we get into all of that, before we started recording, you were telling me that we have some promising news about Windows 11 compatibility.
Yeah, as I mentioned on the last NLSC podcast, I've had no issues with getting ROMs and emulators to work with Windows 11. I've been installing my older Steam games like NBA 2K9, 2K10, etc., having absolutely no compatibility issues with Windows 11 so far. But the uncharted territory was disc games, like older PC games. So today I attempted to install NBA Action 98 and it worked beautifully. The installation process was quick and smooth. The game runs in its standard 640 by 480 and my gamepad works with it, and it booted up with no external application or help needed. And I'm pretty pumped about that. That means it bodes well that, you know, games like NBA Live 2000, NBA Live 06, NBA Live 08, NBA Live 96, etc., it means that there's probably a good chance that those will install on Windows 11 with no issues.
Very promising indeed. And I'm surprised that NBA Action 98 has a 32-bit installer. A lot of games around that time still were using 16-bit installation routines, which is why they won't install the traditional way, the way they're supposed to, on modern systems. Sometimes you have to copy them to the hard drive, make some adjustments to the registry, as is the case with Live 99 and 2000, to name a couple. But that is really good news. And you say the controller worked fine. Were you able to assign all of the actions? Because I remember we had some problems before doing that.
Yeah, and that's still a problem with NBA Action 98. So it only recognizes four buttons on the gamepad. So like if you're using an Xbox One controller or Xbox 360 controller, you have to make sure that you assign turbo to the A button, dribble drive to X, map Y for shooting, and B for passing. And it you and I had a session on that, if you remember correctly. We were using guard number 98.
Oh, yeah. Worked really well.
Chicago Bulls. Yeah, in the Chicago Bulls versus Reggie Miller's Indiana Pacers. And that button mapping system actually works very well for that game. And you know, Andrew, speaking of classics, Teddy Bear the Gamer, he let us know that he picked up six games on March 1st of this year. So these are the titles. He picked up two PlayStation 2 games, NBA 09 The Inside and NBA 08 The Life V3. He also picked up four PlayStation 3 games, NBA 07, NBA 2K7, NBA 2K9, and NBA 2K8. And on the picture he shared, the price tags are there for these games. And it looks like he got some pretty good deals. It looks like he got NBA 09 The Inside for $6.99, NBA 07 for $5.99, NBA 2K7 for $5.99, 2K9 for $5.99, NBA 2K8 for $5.99, and it looks like $4.99 for NBA 08, The Life Volume 3. So my guess is he probably got these in store, maybe at a local store. I have a store that's nearby me called Bull Moose, and they have a ton of classic video games, and there's a lot of basketball games that you can buy there at an awesome price. But yeah, good for him with those pickups.
Oh, for sure. And it's great to see more people doing what you and I love to do, which is build these collections and have multiple versions of games and check out games that maybe you didn't spend as much time with, or you traded them in at some point and you want to check them out again. And that's something that I've done, traded in games in my younger years when I was done with them and needed the money more so than the games on the shelf. You get a bit older, you get a bit more income, you can indulge in these passions a little bit more frequently. But those are some great prices for those games. Those games should not be collectible prices. It's not like a college game like NCAA Basketball 10 or 09 or some of the other March Madness and College Hoops games that are a bit rarer, do go for higher prices. Those games are very common, should go for those prices. And like you say, does sound like a local pickup, because you do find those inflated prices on eBay too often.
And you can create hundreds of hours of memories with those games.
Sure, we do.
Those games have season modes, and some of them have the ability to go on the blacktop. 2K7 has that fun, you know, career style mode, etc. So like, there is a lot of gameplay value in the titles that he bought, and in my opinion, that's a steal. He basically got all six of those games for the price of going to one movie, right? That is pretty awesome stuff. I also want to point out, Andrew, I made a post on X related to NBA 2K16, the PC version. And I have no mods installed in 2K16, but it was me doing a under the legs dunk during the dunk contest with Julius Erving. I got robbed. I scored a 29 on the dunk. I thought
okay, but you didn't jump over anything. Like I said, that's your problem.
Yeah, it's the fact that I didn't have, you know, Taco Fall standing in front of me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, trying to
a box
jump over like a social media influencer or something like that. Yeah. But anyway, that's not the point. The point is that this footage looks unbelievable.
Mm.
And that was reflected in the comments. And one user stated, why does 2K16 on PC look better than 2K24 on PS5? And my response was, better foot planning, so less skating and less sliding, better animation transitions, less janky, and more realistic textures all around. If you look at the footage from the dunk contest over the last few years in the newer NBA 2Ks, the footage looks absolutely terrible because the players are sliding into position everywhere. Like I said, the ball is warping hands on dribbles. The animation transitions are super janky. They've just really declined in the animation department and just the overall quality of player movement. And look no further than that clip of Julius Erving in the dunk contest.
I mean, people see it when you're posting these clips, and I think we should do some side-by-sides, basically identical plays in a 2K16, 2K17, and then a 2K23, 2K24, and people will see. You can put, if you put them side-by-side, I think it's only going to accentuate everything you just talked about.
Yeah, and I have done that, actually. I created a video, I think it was when NBA 2K20 came out.
That's right, and yes,
Yeah, and I actually showed the skating, the ridiculous skating in 2K20.
And you can't deny it when you see it.
And right, the awkward, the janky animations, the suction, all of that stuff. And then I showed footage of 2K16, 2K17, and I believe 2K15. I think it was all three games. And it is night and day better as far as the foot planning on 15, 16, and 17, the animation transitions, the changing of direction, all of that stuff. So, yeah, I think people got to understand something. Not everything gets better in time. Things can decline. Like, things will decline, you know, when bad decisions are made over time and if the direction from the suits isn't sound. So, like I said, you know, you can go on X and go to D for 3G and look at that NBA 2K16 Julius Erving dunk from the dunk contest. It looks amazing.
Creative direction matters. I mean, yes, technology is better in so much as the consoles have more processing power than the previous generation. But like you said, if the design isn't there, if the direction from the higher ups, if their creative vision isn't good, if they are focusing on, again, recurrent revenue mechanics over quality of gameplay and making a fun experience on the virtual hardwood, yeah, the technological improvements are all going to be for naught.
Yeah, I also want to point out, let's not forget that this isn't all about appearance and looks. It dramatically affects the gameplay, you know, the feel, Andrew.
Exactly. Yeah, we've talked about it with the sliding before. It's not just an aesthetic thing. It is defenders sliding into place, offensive players sliding into place because their feet aren't moving. The defender doesn't recognize that they've moved to a different spot because they're tracking the feet movement, but they're just sliding as if they're on ice. And of course, trying to control those players on the sticks. It's not just, oh, look, there's a little bit of clipping, a little bit of skating, a little bit of sliding. It's not just nitpicking the aesthetics. We're seeing the actual impact on the gameplay, and that's what people have got to understand.
Exactly. So before we get into our recent Parsec sessions, I wanted to bring up the new TOS for NBA 2K24 that went into effect on February 28th.
It's here.
And there's a it's here. It's finally here. And there's a tidbit in there. And this could have been in past 2Ks, but I just find it just more shameless BS from Take Two. So for this portion, they're talking about online services. You will not use the services in connection with any wager of any money or other thing of value unless subject to separate express written terms provided by Take Two permitting such conduct. So what they're saying, Andrew, is that they don't want you using their services to gamble, right?
In theory, a good idea. Like, I absolutely agree. You know, in theory, but
how funny is that? Like, yeah. So what I said to that was, I said, 2K says you are not allowed to use our services in acts of gambling. Also, 2K, we are going to shove predatory gambling mechanics down your throat. And if you don't sign this TOS, which discourages you from taking us to court for these mechanics, you can't play the game.
Yeah.
Shameless BS. So, like, how contradictory is that?
It
like,
is
how
very
ridiculous
yeah.
is that?
Ironic, it's hypocritical.
Ironic, yeah. Pretty much any negative term you can think of. But I just wanted to bring that up, that that is also in the TOS.
Definitely an eye-rolling moment there. And I did accept the TOS because that particular clause doesn't apply to me in Australia. So I do want to have access to the game, at least for screenshots and content creation purposes. But, you know, I played a couple of my team games just to see if I'd changed my mind about the gameplay, Derek. This is the PC version. So I noticed that Bad Bunny, the recording artist, is available in my team. He is a cool recording artist and everything, and he's actually turning out to be a pretty good professional wrestler in his appearances with WWE, actually. But, you know, they're doing this, and they're putting celebrities in the game, and I understand that's good for branding, but, man, I wish they could spend that money on Charles Barkley, Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah, that's what some people were pointing out. It's like they would rather get social media influencers in there, or people that, you know, celebrities, you know, athletes from other sports, et cetera. They would rather do that than, you know, pay Rasheed Wallace and Charles Barkley and, you know, beef up the actual NBA content, the historical content, etc. So yeah, totally agree there. But how poor was that my team gameplay, Andrew? That's the thing. That's yeah. like you yeah, it's
didn't,
so
didn't,
frustrating
didn't
on PC.
Yeah.
It's not even fun. Like I just couldn't have any fun with it.
Yeah, no, I played a couple of games just to give it a go, and because I hadn't actually played any my team on PC as yet, I've been having issues actually logging in to the PC version, and there is a fix. If you do run into issues with not being able to connect to the servers, go to NBA2K.com and log in with your Steam account, and it will reactivate it or whatever. But that is a troubleshooting step you can do if you are having problems logging in to the online content in 2K24 PC. But, you know, it just goes to show how much of an afterthought that version is, sadly, at this point. And, you know, we're going to be talking about NBA 2K18 PS3, the last PS3 360 release in the 2K series, and it's a pretty solid game, as we'll get into, but you can definitely see how the games are approached when you're reaching the end of a generation. And when I look at how they didn't focus at all on the last-gen version, the PC port for 2K24 during the preview season, in the recent years they've at least mentioned it. They'll say, oh, we're getting ABC on next-gen and getting XYZ on current-gen. Basically, no mention of current gen during the preview season for 2K24. They very rarely note when the updates are coming through, the official patches, and they don't put patch notes for the last gen version anymore. Or they've done it a couple of times this year, but they're very not very forthcoming about that. So I do think we're reaching the end of support for last gen, and I hope it isn't the end of PC as well.
Yeah, I hope we get next gen on PC. I think that modders are ready to sink their teeth into that. I think it would be a heavily modded game, and I think you'd see a lot of content go up on the NLSC. And frankly, PC gamers at this point, they deserve it, right? I think that PC is still valuable. Like, the PC version is still valuable. I think that even if there's not, you know, millions of people that play the PC version, what Take-Two gets out of the marketing that takes place due to the mod creations, the YouTube videos showing off those mods, people like Dom2K, who's using like Dragon Ball Z mods and other mods, that, and then his videos get, you know, hundreds of thousands of views, sometimes a million views. That is all marketing, free marketing for Take-Two, Andrew. And it helps, you know, promote the brand. It helps them sell their games. So I've always said this. It's not about how many people buy the PC version. There's a greater benefit outside of that, just that, those sales that hit the bottom line, right, for that specific game. It's the fact that they're promoting 2K in such a big way, you know, via content creation. I also want to point out that, like you stated, we played NBA 2K18 for the PS3, and this was asked of us, actually. It was a request from Bucky T. He loves 2K18 for the PS3. So you and I played it. And honestly, after our session, I was like, I wish I had played my team on this game, because it did have my team for the PS3. There's a my team option in there. Obviously, it doesn't work anymore because the servers are off. But the gameplay engine is the same as NBA 2K14. The button mapping is the same as NBA 2K14. Like, you know, if you're using an Xbox controller, instead of using one of the triggers to ask for a pick, you're holding down B to do so. To post up, instead of using a trigger, you're using the Y button, etc. So, like, it's a very familiar gameplay style as well, you know, related to button mapping. You know, the animations are almost identical to that game. And I'm such a big fan of NBA 2K14 for the PC that I can have a ton of fun with the PS3 version of NBA 2K18. In fact, I completely agree with Bucky T that NBA 2K18 for the PS3 is a much stronger title gameplay-wise over NBA 2K18 for the PS4. Xbox One and PC. And it's because it has that old motion system. Because, I mean, when we were playing that game, so just to let everybody know, we were using the Hornets and we were against the Trailblazers. And that gameplay video is up on the NLSC YouTube. But we were using Kemba Walker, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Nicholas Batum, Dwight Howard, Malik Monk, Jeremy Lamb, etc. But we had just some awesome plays in that game. We did end up losing because CJ McCollum and Lillard were just too much for us. And Evan Turner killed us from the mid range and on drives and whatnot. But we had a nice give and go alley oop. We had a couple other nice lobs, nice post moves with Dwight Howard that resulted in basket and fouls. The shooting in that game blows away what we get in NBA 2K24. So we had a couple nice threes with Malik Monk, and I think I hit four threes with Kemba Walker once I figured out his shot in the second half. And, you know, you play that game, and you realize, once again, just the foot planning is a lot better than the NBA 2K18 for the PS4. It, you know, you don't deal with those, you know, slow motion side-by-sides and the suction and the blow-by issue and all of that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, we had fun in that session, and it made me wish I had played my team on that game.
Yeah, I agree. And look, I did just mention that when you get to the end of a generation, you do see games that are clearly afterthoughts, or they're certainly not the priority. And you can see that in 2K18 for PS3, and I imagine the 360 version is the same. You can see some quality control issues, like the new rookies don't have audio. Sometimes the wrong name is called on audio. Dwight Howard apparently hit a three.
Yeah, I had a three with Malik Monk, and they said, you know, Dwight Howard with the three.
I had to look again because I wasn't aware of that issue. That was the first time I'd played 2K18 for PS3, that version, the PS3 360 version. I think I've only got up to, in my collection, 2K15, which was a game they actually did try and put some effort into. They were even saying, oh, we're bringing back crew mode. It's not how you remember crew mode, and it's not what you want, but crew mode is in the game. But anyway, I hadn't played up to 2K18 on that that generation. But sure, you can see that roughness. There's a couple of animations, dunk animations, where they're hanging off the net rather than the rim. So you can see some quality control issues. But like you said, because it's based on that solid foundation that was there in 2K14, PC, 360, PS3, it does feel better in some respects than the what was then, I guess, the current gen version of 2K18, because they're not trying those quote-unquote innovations of that new motion system that didn't pan out And of course, in between that, you had EcoMotion on Next Gen, which I think was a step forward, and then they took that step back with 2K18. And they admitted as such in the 2K19 developer blogs. You can go back and watch my video, the Lies of Developer Blogs, to see the proof of that, Derek. But yeah, it is actually a very solid game on the sticks. And it's funny to check out the last few games of a generation like that. And I mentioned to you in our chat, I said it reminded me a bit of the last few Lives on PlayStation 1, where it was pretty much a copy and paste of NBA Live 2000 PS1. But to that end, still very solid gameplay and worth playing. And I think King J. Mace, that his first NBA Live was NBA Live 2002 for PS1, whereas I was playing the PS2 version for many years, so it wasn't until years later that I experienced that. And it was a similar experience with 2K18 PS3. Very solid game. Surprised me, actually.
Yeah, and I want to point out, too, that NBA 2K18 for the PS3 was not a complete afterthought. And the reason I want to say that is because if you go through the rosters, you'll realize that the all-time teams are there. They actually added the all-time teams into the 2K18 for the PS3. So that's number one. Number two, they also brought over a bunch of the next-gen cyber faces. So if you actually go through the roster, you'll see a bunch of face updates. And they're using that same next-gen cyber face texture on NBA 2K18 models. Most of them came out pretty good. A couple of them are rough. Like, I think the Dirk Nowitzki one is rough, if I remember correctly. But many of them are...
Has 2K ever got a good Dirk face, though? Apart from 2K22, I guess, when he was one of the cover players?
Yeah, that's the best Dirk. The best Dirk is... And it wasn't, like, the younger Dirk. He was improved, but he doesn't look great. Mm. But the older Dirk with the scruffy, like, facial hair and whatnot, that's the best Dirk that 2K ever made. Whoever made that Dirk, hats off to you, and I wish you made more faces. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's not a complete afterthought. And it had my team, too. Right.
True.
They didn't have to put that in there. So you also had my team for that game. The issues really are the audio glitches and some rookies missing cyber faces. But otherwise, you know, you can jump into that game and get a very, very similar gameplay experience to one of the greatest NBA 2Ks of all time, NBA 2K14. And gameplay is just so important. As far as how often you're going to pick up the sticks. So that was one of our sessions. Like I said, we lost that game, Andrew. That was tough. One of my favorite sessions that we had recently was actually on ESPN NBA basketball. And of course, this is NBA 2K4 when they tried to go full-blown ESPN presentation. And we used the Sonics versus the 76ers. So just to quickly paint the picture, the roster that we had starting that game, we were using the Sonics co-op, was Vitaly Potapenko, Vladimir Radmanovic, Rashard Lewis, Ray Allen, and Brent Barry. I put Potapenko in the starting lineup over Drobniak because I think Potapenko was a better player. But we also had Nick Collison off the bench. And the 76ers had Eric Snow, Allen Iverson, Big Dog Glenn Robinson, Derek Coleman in his return to Philadelphia, and Kenny Thomas. And we ended up winning this game, Andrew, but it was very close. And I ended up breaking my defender's ankles with Ray Allen with about 10 seconds to go, stepping in and hitting a mid-range shot, which was just incredibly satisfying, to be completely honest with you. But the gameplay in ESPN NBA basketball is pretty solid. There are a lot of loud dunks, and I mean, you fly in with a guy like Vladimir Radmanovic like he is Stromile Swift, right?
Yeah.
or Amare Stoudemire or Daryl Dawkins. And somebody pointed that out actually in the comment section of the YouTube video. And they were like, why does everybody dunk like LeBron James?
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that NBA Live at the time with NBA Live 2004 was actually doing better. Not everybody was throwing it down like that in NBA Live 2004. I feel like they did a good job of mixing it up for, you know, guards and point guards who were not known for that. They would go in for more layups, right? You know, the big men in that game, while yes, sometimes players that, you know, weren't dominant in real life could be dominant in NBA Live 2004, you would routinely get stuffed at the rim if you tried to go up with them, or you'd be missing your half hooks, or they wouldn't go up as strong, etc. So I actually think that NBA Live 2004 was a little bit more, I would say, realistic in relation to dunking. In comparison to ESPN,
which is funny because 2K obviously in the long run jumped ahead of Live as far as having the more realistic animations and having that more true to life style and a variety of dunks and layups that did account for different players' signature styles and their abilities to be fancy or basic with dunks and layups. But yeah, I would say that at the time, Live was doing it a little bit better. I think Live has the better player interactions. The 10-man freestyle actually added some pretty good 2-man animations. There is the suction there, the vacuum effect, and players getting stuck to each other and stuck in those 2-man animations. They were still figuring that out at the time, but it is better player collisions and physics. And of course, the dribbling. Although there is right stick dribbling of a kind in ESPN NBA basketball. Not to the extent of freestyle control, but you can actually make moves with the stick. And we both made a couple. I mean, I know I was using the stick. I'm sure you used it a couple of times as well, at least. And like you say, making those ankle breakers and just exploding to the rim for a dunk. Some very satisfying plays. That was my first time really spending a lot of time with ESPN NBA basketball. And while I still do prefer Live 2004, a lot of nostalgia there, obviously, to be completely fair about it. But I do think 2004 is the superior game across the board, but, or certainly the more enjoyable to me, shall I say. But you can definitely see how 2K was on the rise at the time, obviously doing some great things with the ESPN presentation. Commentary isn't great, especially compared to Live 2004, where you've got Marv Albert and the Czar, Mike Fratello, right? But the actual overlays, absolutely accurate as of the time. Go back and watch an ESPN broadcast from the 2004 season. It is spot on for what they were doing at the time. And I mean, yes, obviously the dunks weren't as realistic as perhaps Live was doing at the time, but at the same time, these days, I can appreciate that, Derek. It is fun. Like you say, the dunks are big and loud, and when you pull them off, it is very satisfying. It's not as realistic as it probably wanted to be, and certainly not as realistic as it would become and what people wanted to see, but no, I do enjoy it for what it is. I do enjoy that style, going back and playing that, because, as you say, they are very loud dunks.
Andrew would be lying if he said he didn't enjoy his move with Vladimir Radmanovic on the right elbow late in the game, where he did a hesitation dribble, made his defender almost fall, and then he went in for a Daryl Dawkins one-handed hammer.
Yeah, very
and,
nice.
And would he ever do that in real life? Absolutely not. But in the moment, that was absolutely awesome, and I know that that felt good on the sticks for you. And yeah, they really did go all out with that ESPN presentation. And I think they did an excellent job with it, from the menus to the pop-ups, everything. So here's some positives from ESPN NBA basketball and our session. Ankle breakers. I'm not a fan of the dribbling system really in this game, but I had a couple really nice ankle breakers with Ray Allen. You had one with Vladimir Radmanovic. I believe I also had one with Rashard Lewis. And when you do pull that off and you get the defender leaning one way or almost falling over, et cetera, it is a good feeling. I also want to point out that blocks and steals feel very organic in that game, and I think it's one of its strengths. You don't feel like the blocks are canned when you get one. It feels like you did all the work and you timed things properly. You weren't just dragged over to the offensive player and forced into an animation. Steals, whether it be picking somebody's pocket who's standing in front of you or getting in the passing lane or doubling somebody down low and ripping the ball away from him, etc. I think that defense overall can feel more natural than NBA Live 2004. And I think that that's an advantage for ESPN NBA basketball. I also want to congratulate them on having a great ISO camera view for that game, because a lot of games don't get it right, including the newest 2Ks. Even, NBA 2K17, 2K16 and whatnot, they don't have good ISO views either. But that isometric view in ESPN NBA basketball that we used is perfectly zoomed out. You can see, all the floor that you need. And it really is kind of reminiscent, even though it's a little bit more zoomed in than NBA Live 95 and whatnot. It's very reminiscent of that game.
And it rotates as well, obviously. It's one of the ones that rotates, but it works.
It works. It rotates, but it's not game breaking.
It's smooth. Yeah. Yeah. No, it definitely works. I agree.
But yeah, we did win. The fast breaks are pretty fun in that game, not as fun as NBA Live 2004, because I don't think the players move at, an urgent pace. Oftentimes it feels like, even when you're using Turbo, players aren't moving as fast as they should and whatnot. But I think that it was a fun session, and I'm glad we won that game.
No, I'm glad we played it as well. As I said, I haven't spent as much time with it as I would like. That is my goal, that I'm doing that every week this year, revisiting a game that I haven't spent as much time with. And thank you for hosting that. You invited me to play, and I suggested that game, and I'm glad we did play that because, yeah, I'm really appreciating what 2K was doing at the time, that I was a hardcore live head. And again, I probably will always prefer NBA Live 2004 to ESPN NBA Basketball, but playing it then did make me want to play it more. So that's the other cool thing about revisiting games as we do, is that you do find these games that you enjoy more than you remember or enjoy more than you might have back in the day. So, yeah, we just keep building this library of games that we can play together or individually, of course. And once again, as we said last week, the latest version of the PS2 emulator is working so much better, and that's really cool to see. You used it to play NBA Street, NBA Street Volume 2, and those were games that didn't work as well on the old version of PCSX2.
Yeah, and I uploaded a gameplay video from me playing NBA Street Volume 2 on that emulator, once again, obviously the PS2 version, and that's me using the Grizzlies. Jason Williams and Stromile Swift, they're just so fun to use, and I paired Mike Miller with them, and Mike Miller gives you know some shooting. He's obviously super athletic, just like everybody is in that game, so you can still throw him oops and he'll still throw it down and whatnot and pull off fancy dribbles, but he's a good complement to Jason Williams' flashy play and Stromile Swift's great defense and awesome dunking. I'd say that in NBA Street Volume 2, out of the regular teams, that's my favorite duo to use. It's Jason Williams and Stromile Swift. And I was playing against, a Celtics team that I don't think I missed a game for that entire regular season in real life. That's my local broadcast. We watched every game. And it's Paul Pierce, Antoine Walker, and Vin Baker, Andrew. And it's funny to see Celtics Vin Baker out there pulling off street ball moves and yeah, throwing down windmills and going under his leg on dunks and whatnot. To be honest with you, I dominated him overall with Stromile Swift. It was a much better performance for Stromile. But check out that gameplay. Yeah, PCSX2 has really been coming through lately. They've made so many great updates to that emulator. The games are working smoother than ever. It's super easy to record that footage in high quality now as well because of all of our recording tools. And yeah, check that video out. NBA Street Volume 2 is still just one of my favorite games of all time.
The best game in the series. I absolutely agree. And I do like Home Court better than you do, and a lot of people do. But one of the things that I don't like about Home Court is that it got rid of the busted rims. And I suppose it's because they went with more stylized as it is, more realistic animations than the PS2 games, or they were going for a bit more of a gritty atmosphere or whatever. But look, if the game is tied and you hit a two-pointer, a three in the street ball that wins the game, wins by two on a big shot from downtown, that's cool and all. But with street, you've got to finish it with a busted rim. It's just too satisfying not to.
I know you love the fact that I won that game with a reverse dunk from Stromile Swift.
I
will say, though, earlier in the game, when I did get my game breaker, I shot a three. And why? Because when you use your game breaker to shoot a three, you get a plus two and your opponent gets a negative one. As opposed to if you dunk it, you get a plus one and the computer gets a negative one.
Oh, so yeah. It's strategic.
It's strategic. If I was up by, 4, 5, 6 points when I got my game breaker, I probably would have went in for a flashy dunk because, that's the coolest looking, right?
Yeah.
It's not that cool to shoot a game breaker three. But, I did shoot a three on the game breaker earlier in the game. But, yeah, you got to have that busted rim at the end of the game.
And you brought up bringing in Mike Miller rather than Pau Gasol for that balance. And that is so important in both NBA Street and NBA Jam, having that roster, having those players that can do a bit of everything, having that balance. And as we've talked about before, it's why some of the ratings in the classic NBA Jam games were fudged. You've got Cliff Robinson being a bruiser inside. You've got Dennis Rodman being a shot blocker because they don't have a rebounding rating. So to make him a monster at the defensive end, he has to be a great shot blocker in that game, even though he never averaged more than one per game. I don't think he actually averaged at least one per game through his career in any season. But you do fudge the ratings like that to make it work and have that balance. And the best arcade games, the Street and Jam games, they do that superbly.
Yeah, and I also want to point out that the Grizzlies had another small forward option that is great in NBA Street Volume 2. It's Shane Battier.
Of
So I could
course.
have chosen between Shane Battier or Mike Miller. And if I was playing a team that had two big men, maybe I would go with Pau Gasol, right? Maybe I would go with Pau, Stromile Swift, and Jason Williams. But when they're playing that Celtics team and, you know, you have Antoine Walker, who doesn't play like a big guy at all, right? And you're not worried about him defensively. And you have way past his prime Vin Baker. And obviously Paul Pierce is deadly and whatnot. But you don't need to worry about, you know, stacking your team with size.
Yeah. Yeah, that worked out really well. And again, that is so important to have those balanced squads, because you can pull off all the different highlights then.
Yeah, there was a lot of good highlights in that game, so I definitely recommend checking it out on the NLSC YouTube.
Before we go on, a reminder that the NLSC podcast comes out every week on the NLSC, NBA-live.com, as well as our YouTube channel. We're also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast apps. If you're listening on any of those apps, we'd greatly appreciate a review. To keep up with the show and everything we're doing with basketball gaming in general, connect with us on social media. On Twitter and Facebook, we are the NLSC. We also have an Instagram, NLSC Basketball, and on YouTube, we're youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. Once again, visit us at NBA-live.com, where in addition to the podcast, you'll also find all of our original content, as well as our forum and modding community.
So, Andrew, I asked a community question this week, as I normally do, and I stated, basketball gamers, thoughts on this recent announcement from EA and what it could mean for the future of NBA Live. And basically, I'm going to summarize this article, and you can read the full article actually on IGN.com. But the article states, EA to lay off around 670 workers, sunsetting games, and moving away from future licensed IP. Then it states CEO Andrew Wilson says EA is adapting to, quote, accelerating industry transformation, end quote. So if you look a little bit deeper into this article, Andrew, which was published on February 28th of this year, it states, this marks yet another major blow to the games industry coming off of a year and a half of ongoing mass layoffs at studios of all sizes. The cuts impacted roughly 10,000 developers in 2023 and are approaching 8,000 in just the first 2 months of 2024. Just earlier this week, PlayStation laid off 900 staff and closed its London studio. So I'm going to get into a Kotaku article in a moment, but what was your gut reaction to this, and what do you think it could possibly mean for NBA Live's future?
Yeah, I mean, it's never good to hear about people losing their jobs, obviously, and it doesn't inspire confidence that a lot of great games are coming, especially when it does say they're moving away from future licensed IP. From the article, it does sound like they're not foregoing their own IP, which would obviously include NBA Live, NBA Jam, NBA Street. They own that intellectual property. Then again, licensed IP could also include the NBA, because they do have to pay for that license. I don't think it's going to have much more of an impact on NBA Live than it already was. I'm already pretty pessimistic about Live. I'm much more pessimistic than you are about the future of NBA Live anyway, so I don't know that it's going to affect it. It does sound that they are going to still focus on sports games. They did mention that, so that might be the saving grace, but I think they're just moving away from NBA Live and basketball. I think they just don't want to compete with 2K. But it does sound like they are streamlining their production. And certainly, licensed IP like Star Wars and things like that, they're not going to be making as many of those. Maybe they're going to do mobile games, because you can make a ton of money, recurring revenue on that. But I don't think it bodes well for NBA Live as far as being encouraging. But I don't think it's going to change anything from what it was before.
Yeah, I mean, the first line of this article is actually kind of encouraging in relation to EA's sports titles. So it states, according to Wilson, EA will double down on owned IP, sports, and massive online communities. While Wilson did not provide details on which games would be sunset, EA already announced it would be shuttering two mobile games, F1 Mobile Racing and MLB Tap Sports. I had no interest in those games. In fact, I didn't even know they existed. So that really doesn't have an impact on me. The quote that I find interesting from Andrew Wilson, he states, "This greater focus allows us to drive creativity, accelerate innovation, and double down on our biggest opportunities." Me personally, Andrew, I think NBA Live is a huge opportunity, including our owned IP, sports, and massive online communities to deliver the entertainment players want today and tomorrow. Lastly, we are streamlining our company operations to deliver deeper, more connected experiences for fans everywhere that build community, shape culture, and grow fandom. So I don't know what this means for NBA Live. It could mean absolutely nothing, because I still think that NBA Live is going to come back, to be honest with you. And I think, you know, when he says biggest opportunities, I think NBA Live coming back, that is a huge opportunity for EA Sports, because there's no other player in this space. So I'm just going to have my fingers crossed that this is not a negative thing for the future of NBA Live.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and in the short term, it does suck for those who are losing their jobs. As Ben Arcane said on Facebook when I posted your question there, notes that these last 2 years have been brutal for layoffs in the entire gaming industry, not just from EA, but for every major publisher. And that's the thing, is that they're making all these huge profits, and the people putting in the hard work to make these games and to generate those profits, they're getting laid off. Look what happened with NBA Jam on Fire Edition. After that came out, they had all these great plans to have post-release support and updates, and they did have a few, but they pretty much fired most of the team after that game came out, which is why we don't have any further NBA Jam games after that point, I'm sure. So yeah, there's a real greedy side of video game development that doesn't just affect us gamers, although it obviously does, and we've talked about that many times before, but yeah, the way it affects people in the industry, the hardworking developers and programmers, the coders, yeah, it's a damn shame.
Yeah, and it needs to be noted that this is not just an EA thing, right? So Kotaku wrote an article. This was actually updated on February 28th, and it states, 59 days into 2024 and 8,100 plus video game layoffs have been announced. PlayStation, Electronic Arts, and Microsoft are the latest companies to announce cuts. Now, I'm only going to go over the bigger ones that were mentioned in this article, but Unity Software, 1,800 people got laid off. Twitch, 500 people. Playtika, 300 to 400 people. Discord, 170 people. Pixelberry Studios, 120 people. Riot Games, 530 people. Microsoft, 1,900 people. Sony Interactive Entertainment, 900 people. Electronic Arts, like we just stated, 670 people. So let's not push the panic button yet in related to what's going on with EA. This is like industry-wide. And what I want to point out, Andrew, is kind of what I think the reasons are for this turmoil in the video game space. One, I think that too many games in the same spaces are trying to be like one another. Two, poor marketing efforts for great games made by smaller companies. There's a lot of great indie titles, a lot of great games made by just smaller companies in general on Steam, where you don't see any marketing for these games. In turn, you see very few comments and ratings on their Steam pages, and they don't do well sales wise. Another reason being, you know, putting profit goals over consumer happiness, you know, basically with microtransactions, with DLC, you know, cutting corners on the gameplay in order to put more gambling mechanics in these games. Companies focused so much on trying to turn a profit and forgetting what matters most and what would actually sell their game, right? You know, the great gameplay, deep modes, a unique approach to their presentation. There's just too many games that are being made similar to each other. And then also less companies willing to take chances. That's the other thing. So I think that, like I said, there's so many games out there that are so similar to each other with similar battle mechanics, if you're talking about like RPGs, so similar open world mechanics, similar mechanics in their adventure games, et cetera. And in the sports space, we basically only have one true option for each of the major sports, right? One or two max options for the major sports. And these smaller companies and other AAA companies or whatnot are not willing to take chances in those spaces in order to compete you know, with, you know, in the example of like somebody competing with 2K and whatnot. What would you say you think the reasons are for the situation we're in the video game industry?
I mean, obviously they are putting profits over artistic merit, and look, profits are important. It is a business. It needs to be sustaining at the end of the day, but you hit the nail on the head, is that they don't take risks. I mean, there's a reason we don't see games like NBA Street anymore, and why it's rare to see new games like that outside of the indie space, is that they just want those IPs that will generate millions and millions of dollars, billions of dollars, in fact, and they won't use some of that money to take a risk on a more artistic game or a more ambitious project like a Street back in the day. And of course EA could do that at the time because Live was pretty strong. They were doing pretty well, as I understand it. So they were able to take those risks. But we don't see that. We just see that homogenized style, again, like as you said, having that glut of games that are doing the same thing follow the leader. So perhaps by doing so, the success isn't as high as they want, the recurrent revenue isn't as high as they want it to be. We've seen 2K talk about having disappointing quarters with recurrent revenue, and they're still making billions from it. So it's that focus on profits to the detriment of the quality of the product that has got us into this situation. I would absolutely agree. You know, there's another comment on our Facebook page here from JE. Says, hope they lose the NFL license. They need to. Games suck. And, I mean, that is the thing with EA, with that exclusivity with Madden, that Madden gamers are frustrated with how the series has stagnated. With that being said, Derek, I don't think it's going to be much better if 2K got the license. Look what they're doing with NBA 2K, WWE 2K, with some of the shady practices there and the greedy practices there. I don't think you can trust anyone, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's the unpleasant truth, right? The only thing good about 2K getting into that NFL space, you know, in the football gaming space, is it would give people at least another option from a gameplay perspective. And it would be beneficial for offline gamers, possibly, right? People that don't depend on online modes, you know, where there's gambling mechanics and whatnot. And maybe those people would be able to get, you know, a new, fresh gameplay experience and, you know, just give them another option. And I think options are incredibly important. What I find puzzling about all this, Andrew, is that video game making programs are more accessible than ever, and there are more programs than ever. You know, video games should be peaking in popularity. You know, why are there not more developers making a splash in the space? And Suits not understanding that if you make a great game that is fair to the consumer and market the hell out of it, it can be a hit in almost any genre. I truly believe that. And unfortunately, I don't think there's a lot of great minds in the video game space right now in relation to understanding that.
Well, as far as understanding artistic vision and designing good games, not just making money, absolutely. Jacqueline, Lady Culture, says, an excitingly rapid acceleration right down the toilet is what's happening. To your point, it feels like we should be in a golden age with all the technological improvements and what developers are capable of doing these days, the technology they have to work with, everything they've done over the decades of possible gaming and gaming in general to build upon, and it's just not happening.
There are videos on YouTube that are 3 hours long, 5 hours long, 8 hours long, etc., that literally walk you through every step of making a game in Unreal Engine, right? Or in Unity Engine and whatnot. And I've watched some of these videos, and they go into painstaking detail. Andrew, they're talking about, you know, how to create animations, how to import animations, how to get textures, how to make textures, how to create landscapes for your open world game, for your RPG, for your adventure game, how to animate battle mechanics, all of that stuff. Like, free stuff out there, right? These videos are for free. These aren't classes that you have to pay for.
Height of accessibility, yeah.
Yeah, it's the height of access, the height of accessibility. And there's so many minds out there that could just absorb this material and possibly hit the ground running and, you know, form a team and try to make a great game. And it puzzles me that in 2024, in the sports gaming space, that we have less options than ever. Like you stated, we should be in the golden age. We should have 2, 3, maybe 4 choices for each major sport. I truly believe that. And unfortunately, that's not the case.
And looking at the responses we have, a lot of people share our pessimism and disappointment. Nothing about this announcement really excites anyone, obviously. Layoffs and focusing on this and marketing weasel words and buzzwords and everything else. Sticky Fingers says, in his opinion, it's not going to mean anything good for NBA Live's future. They'll focus on current games that contain microtransactions and, quote-unquote, improve the system.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that, right? I think that the reason why they kept NBA Live Mobile around is because of the My Team style element of it, right? You know, that ultimate team approach to that game, and they can flood that game with those microtransaction mechanics, with the that cash grab that comes with it. And they believed that, you know, by NBA Live Mobile being out there, they could still be in the NBA space and possibly be profitable. They didn't care about making it a great game. Honestly, I've played NBA Live Mobile multiple times, and I think it sucks, Andrew.
Yeah.
The gameplay on that game, it sucks. The gameplay is a complete afterthought in that game. It doesn't run at a good frame rate. The animations suck. Like, it's a terrible game. But they know that they can prey on, again, I'm going to use that word because it's the same thing 2K does. It's predatory mechanics, right? They're preying on consumers, on vulnerable consumers. They know that they can still turn a profit on NBA Live Mobile because it doesn't have that high overhead. And there's going to be a lot of people out there, you know, who want an NBA game on their mobile phone, and they can milk those people for every dollar. And that's what their goal is. So, yeah, I agree with him.
And Byron Good Game says, I feel EA is done making basketball games, apart from NBA Live Mobile, of course, after several attempts, and none of them went successful. Although I enjoyed NBA Live 19, still play it from time to time, the gameplay still needs a lot of work, and EA refusing to do mocap doesn't help the issue either. Now, EA does do mocap for NBA Live, but I get what he's getting at there, that it doesn't produce good results as far as the animations and the way they're stitched together, etc. But yeah, I think a lot of people are not really confident about Live coming back, and over the years, I've fallen into that camp. Like I say, I'm more pessimistic than you are about that, but I'm feeling that pessimism that people like Byron are.
I think they could have built off of NBA Live 19 and done an additional mocap and made the gameplay a lot stronger and truly been able to, you know, made it so they could compete in the space. One of the problems is, and the reason why he probably thinks there wasn't real, like, true mocap done with that title, is the fact that it's the same thing I've said before. The game lacks signature style.
Yeah.
And it hurts the gameplay.
And the
like I can
too.
Use Kevin Durant. Yeah, I think it's not as stiff as some past titles, but I have my issues with the gameplay related to, if I'm using Kevin Durant and Pascal Siakam, to me they feel like the same, and they look like they're playing the same on the
That's
court.
That's the big thing,
right?
Yeah.
There's also like a floaty pass issue. Passing is delayed on both passing and catching. Animations is just like super heavy animations in that game. Pretty much every drive to the hoop is completely canned. The game is flooded with canned animations. I think that they smoothed out the animations quite a bit on NBA Live 19, but the game has just too many gameplay issues for me to have like a truly good time with it, you know, in that 5-on-5 space.
But I mean, people still want to support EA Sports, and that's the thing. Steven, the Live King, says, to me, EA thrives when all the big four sports games are good. NHL and NBA Live need to be profitable. They can bring back Triple Play while they're at it.
He posted footage of the new EA NHL game. It looks like real life, Andrew. And not just from a graphics perspective, but from the player movement perspective. And it really shows that when you have the right minds on the job, when you have the right developers in the seats, and you have the suits making the right decisions and related to a specific game or franchise and whatnot, that you can produce amazing results. I couldn't believe how good that game looked. And it's kind of how I felt when I first played MLB The Show 2020, which is a game made by San Diego Studios. I was absolutely floored at the gameplay quality, the visual quality, the depth, the customization features, all of that stuff. Because the suits gave the proper direction with that game, and the developers were on top of how to make the gameplay great.
And along those same lines, Bucky T says, "Man, you know how I love NBA Live, but I'm afraid it may never return, unfortunately, and that's heartbreaking. But sometimes, no message is a message, and EA NBA Live hasn't mentioned anything to us in years. It's sad for real. I wish they realized just how much we love the series." And that's the thing, there's so much goodwill there. And if you put out a game, like you said, if you put out a great game, people will play it. If you build it, they will come.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is it is disappointing. And it's not just because it's NBA Live. It's just because people want options, right? And they don't have them. But yeah, there is a long history with NBA Live. And, you know, they've had a couple situations in the last 15 years where they had a strong gameplay base and they didn't build off of it. They canceled the series. They had missteps, etc. You know, NBA Live 10. So strong gameplay wise, right? They could have built off of that. Instead, they went the NBA Elite 11 route. They canceled the game. They didn't come back until NBA Live 14. Then they built a new motion system and a decent gameplay system overall with NBA Live 18, and then built off of that for NBA Live 19. And then they were getting scores of, you know, 7 out of 10 from, you know, IGN and whatnot. They were getting favorable reviews.
And that was good for them, yeah.
From consumers, from different review sites and whatnot. And then they dropped the series again when they could have built off of what they had in NBA Live 19. So, yeah, it's really disappointing what's happened with the Live series.
And Nate posted a two-tweet or two-ex-post, whatever we're calling them these days, response, which I absolutely agree with. And it's you can see the frustration in his words, and I think it does sum up how a lot of us feel about the situation. Says, "EA, greedy corporation, only looking to make money and exploit its most loyal customers. NBA Live, dead, extinct, never coming back. EA gave up creating games because they are inferior to 2K and other companies. CEO of EA fires 10,000 people so we can afford a new yacht and caviar." And follows it up with, "Video games are now gambling tools used to suck money out of children, releasing unfinished games because suits give developers deadlines that cannot be met. The glory days of gaming are long gone, and this new crop of gamers will support their oppressors and denounce old heads." And I think that's absolutely right. And that last sentence obviously resonates with me, and I'm sure it does you as well, because how often have we said, no, it's not putting an old head in their place when we say, hey, things used to be better. They used to be less greedy. We got more value for money. And people say, oh, well, go play an old game, old head. Well, okay, we will. But you got to see what's happening here. And a lot of people do shill for it. They defend it because they want to be influencers. They want to have those perks and that access and be the next big YouTuber or TikToker or whatever. And they'll shill for the companies hoping they can work with them or maybe for them someday. And everything he said about being gambling tools to suck money out of children, unfinished games because the deadlines are just so harsh, and of course just firing the people, the hardworking people who are working on the games. Yeah, it's really grubby.
I can't disagree with anything that he said. And unfortunately, that's the harsh reality we're facing right now in this space. I do agree with him that the glory days are gone. Those days are not coming back, you know, of having 3, 4, or 5 different options for a specific sport. I think the saddest part of all of this is what he mentioned in relation to preying on our youth, right? Because that's really what this is all about. Anything to turn a profit, even if it means ripping money out of our kids' pockets, you know, ripping money out of their parents' pockets, you know, taking advantage of young adults and whatnot at any cost. And it's really unfortunate. And like I said, it's very slimy. And unfortunately, I don't see this trend going anywhere anytime soon.
You know how they say that video games are for children, which is something that we do push back on. They are for people of all ages. As long as you are taking care of your responsibilities, how you unwind is, you know, with games or TV or board games or whatever, absolutely fine. But it's funny how the people who are calling them stuff for children don't really seem to be that concerned about the effect they're having on children. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think most people care. I think that most people are really just looking out for themselves.
Dismissive of the issues,
and their interests and whatnot. And if something is bothering them, oftentimes they will speak up, but they won't speak up for a fellow gamer or a fellow consumer, or even stand up for what they may even think is right and whatnot, or they'll just turn a blind eye to issues if it's not just, you know, if it's not personally affecting them. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is.
And heading over to the Discord now for a few more responses. Layla says, the end of gaming and the rebirth of modding, and obviously going back to all favorites and updating them is an option, and one that we absolutely support. This is March Modernist, after all, has just tipped off at the NLSC, and we are going to be celebrating modding throughout the month. Speaking of great modders, Pep says, industry went into quantity, plus shady practices, over quality, and this is a result. What could that mean for NBA Live? Mobile version might still exist if profits are big enough, and normal version might not come back. And Murat, aka Badger, says, I don't think normal version will ever come back. Maybe if they plan a college basketball game or something like that, they could migrate the engine from one to another. Or the other case, an unwritten agreement with Take-Two, where EA gave up NBA and 2K didn't bother to build games for NHL and NFL. I don't know about that, but EA is certainly not very keen to compete with NBA 2K. For American market, Madden Monopoly matters a lot, but for the rest of the world, NBA games rule after FIFA. So there are three sports games with big markets, FIFA, NBA in world, and NFL in US. EA gave up NBA. And yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to, is that after so many years of NBA Live, so much loyalty from gamers, so much interest in there being competition in the space and alternatives in the space, EA has just kind of given up. And they were taking steps over that last generation, Live 18 and 19, getting those favorable reviews, as you said. And we saw the progress. I'm not as big a fan of Live 19 as I am 18, but the potential was there. And they just decided, okay, we're not gonna try anymore.
You know what, Andrew? An NBA Street return would make a gigantic splash. You see the comments on social media. An NBA Jam return would make a huge splash. Those games would be instantly popular. Those games absolutely can turn a profit. Like, I don't care if I'm not a developer or a suit or whatnot in the video game space. I know that those games would be popular, Andrew. So, unfortunately, there's not enough companies out there, either smaller companies or big companies, that are willing to take chances. And even things that are obvious, like I said, NBA Street and NBA Jam, for some reason, these companies don't want to create games like this anymore. And it just doesn't make sense to me, you know, with the height of access, the height of sharing, the height of what should be promotion because of all the different social media platforms and all the different ways you can promote your product and whatnot. You know, all the tools we have for recording and sharing footage and everything. It just doesn't, none of this makes sense to me.
I mean, if they came back with a new NBA Street, new NBA Jam, that marketing would go viral. People would absolutely care about that. There was a time when games like that were perhaps more of a financial and creative risk, but they are established now. There's nostalgia for them. They've definitely got an appeal when made well, and the EA NBA Jam games were made well, as were the NBA Street games. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. And you've got that nostalgia. You've got that casual appeal. Those arcade games appeal to more than just hardcore hoopheads. Of course, they absolutely do appeal to hardcore basketball fans, but the casual gamers, the casual sports gamers, do have that interest as well because they are fun to pick up and play. You don't need to worry about all the in-depth strategy of a sim game and all of those mechanics. So they have a great casual appeal as well. That is why they are so successful. Yeah, it is just bewildering and disappointing.
Yeah, and I appreciate all the responses to this prompt. And, you know, I love hearing the community's thoughts on, you know, industry trends and what's going on with basketball, video games, and everything. So, as always, thank you for responding to the mailbag.
Absolutely. And look, we would like to be optimistic, but sometimes the news does inspire pessimism, Derek.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we could always be positive on this show, right? But let's face it. You see what's going on in the video game industry. Like, you know, we stated before, we should be in a golden age, and it's the exact opposite. So there's definitely issues in not only the basketball gaming space, but in the video game space in general. So we do want to talk about those serious issues.
For sure. But on the other hand, we may be in a golden age of retro gaming. So that's cool. We will continue to talk about that, Derek.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, we're going to be connecting on Parsec consistently for the rest of the year and sharing those highlights. So I hope you enjoy them.
Much more fun to come, and hopefully some good news at some point as well. With that being said, that has brought us to the end of this week's show. As always, we thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again next week and every week, either on the NLSC, nb-live.com, our YouTube channel, or your podcast app of choice. In the meantime, connect with us on social media. That's where you can get in touch with us and, of course, stay up to date with all of our content. So, Derek, go ahead and plug the handles.
Yeah, you can find me on X at D43G and at D4384. I'm also on YouTube, D43, and on the NLSC, D43.
I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on X. The NLSC is on X and Facebook at the NLSC. We're also NLSC Basketball on Instagram and Threads. We're on YouTube at NBA Live Series Center, And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, nb-live.com, for everything we do for Basketball Video Games. So, thank you once again for tuning in, and until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone!